I think fat's good for us. But then we read Leviticus 3 and says, you shall not eat any of the fat that around the liver, around the, you know, the tail fat. All fat is the Lord's. Leviticus 7 specifically says, you shall eat no fat from a cow or a sheep or a goat. It's like, what the? This is contradictory, Lord. What's going on here? And so I've been writing the first president of the fraternity, Weston Price Foundation. We're in contact with a Messianic Jewish believer who wrote a book called Holy Cow, Does God Care About What You Eat? And they've given us permission to do that in Spanish now, so we have a translator working on that. But I've wrestled with this, because as I talk with people, and because, you know, some of the things in Leviticus 3 and in Leviticus 7, he says, you know, like the fat of the tail of the lamb should always be given to the Lord. It's the Lord's. The fat around the kidneys, which we know as suet, is given to the Lord. And I thought, huh. And so I talked to culture and said, oh yeah, the tail of the fat of the lamb, that's a special fat for us. That's very prized. In fact, I was talking to an Egyptian, and he says, if you notice, the Middle Eastern sheep are different than the European sheep. Because I used to always read the scripture and go, well, the fat of the tail, I'm thinking, there's no fat on the tail. What are you talking about? You see a little lamb go by, it's like, that's the ugliest little thing you've ever seen. And he showed me a picture of a Middle Eastern sheep, and the tail is this really triangular, almost ugly thing, like a triangle, and it's full of fat. And this Egyptian brother said, oh yeah, my father, we call this the sweet fat, and it's for special occasions. And I listened to that and go, okay, Lord, but you said we're not supposed to eat that, but here this culture says it's a special fat, and then see how good fat's for you. And so my take on the whole idea of Leviticus 3 and Leviticus 7, when it says to eat no fat. Now, what happened is that the church, because we've given everything to the world, when this low-fat diet came out, the Christians said, see, the Christians, we had it all right all along. No fat, no fat. But now they're starting to going, well, this low-fat diet is not working. It's sort of a failure. And now what are we saying as Christians? And so my take is that in the context of Leviticus 3 and 7, it's regarding sacrifices, okay? And that we are to offer the very best to the Lord. And when we offered a sacrifice, you know, the suet and the fat here that was usually prized was given back to the Lord. Now, that's my take on it. And I'm still, you know, I've had to change my viewpoints as I'm going along, realizing, oops. And so Craig might be wrong. And so just keep that before you. Seek it out yourself. Just as scientists are going, oops, we made a mistake, Craig also has his oops moments, okay? So, but that's a question I've struggled with. It seems so black and white, but I don't believe it is in terms of it's the context. And why would a loving creator, again, give me an animal to eat that's good for me to eat, and part of it is deadly for me? See, I would have to question, see, something's not right there. So I look at these things from a different standpoint. So I go back to Genesis first, before I get to Leviticus, because Genesis says there's a clean animals, the animals were clean animals that Noah took on the ark, and animals we could eat. And so I think there's just something we need to apply. Okay. Good. Okay, let's get into some practical things. Well, we're trying to be practical, eat butter. But if possible, try to make your diet consumes high-quality animal products, some raw. Now, what do you mean by that? Okay, high quality. Now, we always say there's eggs. We'll learn about it later. Eggs are good for us. Okay, eggs come from a chicken. Chicken, God says, is a clean animal, and he produces an egg. And even though the cholesterol in the yolk, we can trust that God knows what he's doing. When a chicken is eating bugs and grasses and stuff, it produces a good egg, okay? So now then, there is the egg, and then there's the egg, okay? And so what we try to tell people to do is eggs are good for us, for example. So start eating eggs, okay? But they come from the grocery store, and they're made from this huge factory things. I said, well, I know, but at least you start there. Now, the ideal is to find a place where you have chickens walking around eating bugs and grasses and spiders and stuff, and say, can I buy your eggs? And you notice that egg is very nutritious. It's a high-quality egg, okay? And so high-quality means whole dairy products from pastured cows. Okay, cows eating grass. Now, we know it's not always easy to find because we have a whole system that's bought into this quick food and, you know, we'll take care of everything. So if possible, go to whole dairy, first of all. Okay, if you're into the skim thing or this 2%, say, okay, Lord, maybe I need to look at something here. Start whole dairies. Try to find eggs from pastured chickens again. Chickens are out walking around, not under everything, et cetera, et cetera. So that's high quality. Now, raw, a good example is a raw food or your milks, your butters, your creams, your cheeses, even your raw fish. Okay, raw shellfish, oysters. Now, we would say biblically, okay, we would probably avoid that. But Weston Price, their foundation, says, hey, we see cultures doing this. And then even raw meat dishes. You know, we think of cooking our meat. In fact, overcooking meat is actually not healthy. Okay, it's better to actually do your rare to medium rare, from what I understand. Okay, that it doesn't kill all the enzymes. It's easier to be digestible, and so a lot of cultures have raw meat dishes, carpaccio. I'm sorry, the amino acid. Right. Okay. Right. That's a different way of making meat. Now, I'm not saying eating all meat raw. I'm just saying a lot of these cultures had some of their animal products raw. So they would cook their meat, but they'd also maybe dry their meat. Okay. They would eat it, you know, I don't know, whale blubber. Sindri, did you eat whale blubber raw or cooked, or how did you eat the whale blubber? You cooked it, okay. But some of these cultures had these things raw. So if possible, just because of the quality there. Okay. For example, in Russia, there's a dish for the sick, and they grind up raw beef, and they mix it with raw egg yolk and raw onion, and they give it to the sick people, okay? And so we would think, salmonella, bacteria, you're going to die. But, well, we've been doing this for centuries, and it's worked. So just, if possible. Now, very typical, easy thing to eat raw is raw cheese, and that's something that's been known for centuries. And I'm always amazed how milk can be made into so many different types of cheeses. I think, how do they do that? I mean, you have hundreds and hundreds of types of cheeses, okay? And so raw milk is not always legal. Here in Switzerland, you can get raw milk, and so this is why we would do promote the idea of looking to how we can get a local farmer whose cow is healthy, and if a cow produces healthy, he's healthy, he produces healthy milk. In fact, there's medical doctors now in America who are basing their practices on using raw milk as a healing source, okay? And so we have some great books on the whole idea of the whole milk story, Untold Story of Milk by Schmidt. He's a MIT graduate. A lot of these guys are coming out now with realizing the importance of milk in its raw sense. Okay. I'm sorry, just go quickly here. Here's a good chicken. It's a good chicken's eating outside. We mentioned pasture-type animals. That means cows, anything outside, eating grass in its natural surrounding like God designed it to do, okay? And what we've done today is we said, no, let's put cows and pigs and everything else into big, huge barns, and we will feed them what we think is right, and therefore we have a lot of health issues. And so a good movie to watch with your biblical glasses on, should always be on when we watch movies, is Food Incorporated. Just where's your food come from, okay? And so you just realize, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that's where my chicken came from. In fact, speaking of cows, they did a study, Washington Price did a study at the foundation, and they looked at two different types of butter. Cow butter from cows that came from a confinement in big, huge warehouses, and butter that came from cows that were grass-fed out under the sunshine. And much more nutritious, much more nutrient-dense. So again, butter is good for us. If we can only get it as the butter on the left, okay, we'll go for butter. Okay, but that the idea, if we can work our way up to where we have, wow, it's almost orange in it. I've never seen butter that yellow before. We can get some, in Switzerland, have you seen butter that yellow? I know some butter last night was yellow, but I don't know if it's that dense of yellow, but okay. Chickens here, of course, we put everybody in our big, huge houses of massive amounts of chickens, and so we're feeding them many things. And so we've gone to an industrial agricultural start. And actually, it's part of the Marxist agenda, the communism idea is putting everything in this aspect. And so we've done that to our agricultural wells. Chickens can be 65,000 birds under one roof. They cut off their beaks a lot of time because they actually, under so close confinement, they actually start eating each other or killing each other. And so they cut their beaks off so they don't do that to each other. And this is where vegans will go, man, look at the treatment of animals. And so I'm going to save a chicken by not eating a chicken. And so we would recommend those who are going vegan because of the bad treatment of animals is to start supporting farmers who have the ethical treatment of animals. Supporting farms who grow chickens the way God created them. Grow cows the way God designed cows to be raised. Organics doesn't mean a lot necessarily today. So the bio-organic words, to be careful, it's marketing again, okay? So For example, these are organic or bio chicken productions. They're under a big roof here. They're considered free range or cage free. Do you know why? Because they have a little door that goes outside into a little area where the sun shines at. But anybody who knows chickens, they go together in groups. You know, they don't go outside, but they have access to, and they say, hey, you didn't want to go outside, but that's not my problem, but it's cage free. Okay, so this is why, if possible, know your source. And here's a good example of a different type of eggs. Okay, notice the colors here. Here's a very pale egg, which is from the supermarket, and then the more natural you get and where it grows. Oh, it's not the same here. Okay, yeah, this one's darker here. Now on my slide up here is beautiful. You can come here and look at this. It's very obvious, but usually the darker the yolk, the better the nutrition quality is. In fact, in southern Spain, I was talking to we saw them catetos, or people from the campo, like people from the countryside. And we have a Spanish dish, we call it Spanish tortilla. And it's with eggs and potatoes, and maybe some onions. It's usually a little thick, and you cut it up, it's good. And they're yellow. And I was talking to this Spanish older gentleman. He said, well, when I was growing up as a child, my Spanish tortilla was orange. Why was it orange? Because of the yolk. His chickens were growing and eating nutrient things, so that yolk was so densely nutritional dense that the Spanish tortilla was orange. Now we have yellow, okay? And so remember, chickens are not vegetarian. And a lot of times we'll see, you know, all chickens fed with vegetarian feed. Well, hold on, read your Bible, which they don't. But, you know, chickens are not vegetarian. They eat bugs. In fact, if you have chickens around, they go for spiders and worms, man, they boom, and they're on it like that, okay? So they need that to keep them. And also interesting here about sunshine and vitamin D. Now, have you heard of milk, for example? Milk fortified with vitamin D. That's more of America, North America. Have you heard of that here in Europe? D. Okay. Where does vitamin D come from? What's that? From fat, but how does it get into the fat? Especially from an animal source. Okay, sunlight, sunshine. Okay, and so when man started taking cows out of the sunshine, put them into barns, started taking chickens out of the sunshine, put them into barns, they realized that the vitamin D level dropped off. And so they had to fortify the milk with vitamin D. And so what they started doing in my country, started fortifying my milk with vitamin D, D1 or D2. D2, which was a plant-based form, is toxic to man. So they quietly said, oops, we made a mistake. So they put vitamin D3 on, which is the animal source of vitamin D. And so animals need to be in the sun to have to make vitamin D. So they make it from their skin and also from the plants they eat. And so this is why it's so important to have natural things. Okay, here's some chicken livers. That's something a little easier to see here. We've got your normal here down to your pasture fed. And so it's darker. The darker the color, the more nutrient-based it is. Okay, and I mentioned before, if possible, try to incorporate liver into your diet. I'm trying to do that. I made some chicken pate, and it wasn't as good as my beef pate. And my son, he's with me. He'll eat it. In fact, he's like my dad. My dad sort of just eats things. He's fit, slender, 75 or whatever. But if it's in front of him, he'll start eating it. And so I'll put some liver pate on my son's breakfast. He has eggs and cheese, and he'll have sometimes all sardines with his eggs. And I'll put a little bit of liver pate with some sauerkraut. And sure enough, he'll eat the pate. Okay. They say it's the good size, about the size of a deck of cards, about once a week, if possible. So it's not a lot. It's a very nutrient-dense food, okay? So it's not like liver every day, okay? But it's, if you can, try to get cod liver oil, these different liver oils. Very good. Alrighty. So that's the high quality. Remember, there's, start here, okay? There's cheese, and then there's cheese. There's beef, and then there's beef, okay? So just try to start saying, Lord, how can I start working my way towards the higher quality? Why? Because I love you. I want to nourish my body. And this is why this whole heart that's coming up with Sindre and others and my brother in the back, we need to get back into farming. We have to see how the agriculture depends on the health of a nation. Food goes back to the agriculture side of things. And this is why my belief is starting to get more into agriculture. We have to think, where's my food come from? How am I growing it? And and go from there. Yeah, beef liver. Well, yeah, I don't know. I'm sure it's beef liver. I know a lot of these livers, like pork in Spain, there's lots of pork liver. Now, I don't recommend pork liver just because, okay. Okay, so the viruses. And no, what they recommend for liver is to make sure you freeze it first. Freeze it for like 2 weeks at least. If you can, get a liver, freeze it for at least 2 weeks. I understand that helps kill the pathogens after 2 weeks. Maybe that's true or not, but that's just to be on the safe side, because people go, well, liver, it's that filter, it's full of all kinds of things. Well, the liver, its function is to filter toxins and get it out of the body, not store the toxins. So that's my understanding. And people are afraid of liver, so yeah, freeze it first. So yeah, pig liver, I would, yeah. But okay, cod liver oil capsule form, okay. Yeah, there's a lot. You can actually buy freeze-dried beef liver as well. Decaffeinated or something? Desiccated, dehydrated, yeah. And you can buy that, so. And so people don't realize the importance of liver, okay? Some of this cancer research, Max Gerson did some very good work on cancer, and he actually started out giving his patients liver juice. Somehow he would, enzyme from the liver juice would help the cancer. And so my brother back here did a lot of cancer research, so he understands that. Alrighty? Okay, let's just go to another step here with high quality. Let's go to make our bone broths. Okay, yay, and say, what is this? Okay, this is where we take the leftover meat or the leftover bones that we usually throw away and we put into a pot and we boil them. What does this do? This causes all the minerals in those bones to come into a liquid form so our body can assimilate them, and it's very nourishing. Okay, and so traditionally, this was, everybody had this, you know, every good French restaurant, you see a stock pot boiling in the back, simmering in the back. And so what we do with ours, we take our chicken. I try to find a whole range or free range chicken. This was shocking when I first did this. When I go to the grocery supermarkets, most chickens are this now that white, pale color, right? White color. And I ordered a grass-fed chicken. I said, Lord, we're going to do it. It's four times the amount of these other chicken, but we're going to do it. So he goes and orders it, and I go pick it up, and he brings it out. And I was like, what's wrong with it? I said, what do you mean? He's yellow. But he said, no. I said, this is the normal color of chickens. The white is not the normal. This should be yellow. So you ladies in Asia are shaking your heads. Okay, so you know what a real chicken should be, right? Okay. So, and you can, here, we just had the grocery store yesterday. You can see the free range or the grass-fed or whatever you call them, organic chickens, and they're yellowish color. So we put our chicken in. We had cold water, chicken. We had a couple of tablespoons of vinegar to help bring the pH down, to help absorb the minerals out of the bones. We had some onions and some carrots. If possible, add chicken heads or chicken feet, because there's lots of gelatin in that, and gelatin is very health-giving. In fact, you know, being a wireman for so long, you tend to look for, you know, cheap entertainment. So I had put in a bunch of chicken feet in my broth, you know, and so we let it simmer for 24 hours. And so the next morning, our kids are having breakfast, and my pot of broth is simmering there, and I open the top up, and I'm stirring, and all of a sudden I scream, ah! The kid's like, Dad, what's wrong, Dad? Ah! And so I pull out these chicken feet, you know, they come out, and of course, then the kids start screaming, ah! Then I start laughing, and it's, oh, Dad! So, but they're very historically used, a whole body, if you can, you know, all of the fish and the chicken heads and stuff, fish heads, okay? Fish broth will cure everything, a South American proverb. In fact, Jewish penicillin is considered to be the chicken soup. Jewish penicillin, natural chicken soup. And so we hear this historically, eat your chicken soup when you're sick. Well, they're referring to a homemade chicken broth, not the Campbell's soup that they make with, you know, imitation packets and stuff, okay? And so try to use it if possible, okay? It's just fun to do. It's just a different style. Just incorporate that into your lifestyle. Alrighty. Anybody made broth here? Anybody makes your broth? Okay, do you make your broth? Now, is it a lot of fish broth where you're from? Or you do chicken as well or beef? Fish broth every day, okay. Right. It becomes a lifestyle for you guys, so. For us in the West, it's like, I'd have to do what? Ooh, I'm making a broth. Okay, interesting. It's the opposite here, isn't it? It's here that it's the meat that's expensive, and they almost throw away the bones because we've lost this traditional cultural way of making things. And so, good. And it's fun. It makes things taste really good. Okay, this is why I'm like, honey, I'm in charge of the broth because I want my rice and my beans. I want my chicken enchiladas. I want it to taste good. And I can tell when she's made it with the broth or she's ran out. Honey, I know we ran out. It's okay. I'll get some more. I'll make some. It's a different flavor. Okay. If possible, next one here, I think we have on our list here, is to eliminate or excitotoxins and extrusion. What this is here, okay, this is the whole area we can delve into a little bit more, but we don't want to because it's a lot of information here. Excitotoxins are man-made substances that cause us to, it's excited, it excites our nerve endings. Now, a good excitotoxin, for example, are these things, MSG, hydrolyzed proteins, and all these artificial sweeteners, the things that artificially stimulate our body to make things taste what they're supposed to be tasting, okay? And so the whole idea of these excitotoxins, they're actually neurotoxins. In fact, there's books now, doctors have realized, they've studied these things, the nerve cells, and that this is for Dr. Russell Blaylock, Excitotoxins, the book by him, he looked at these different neurons, and after they were had taken MSG or aspartame, and what it does, it excites the nerves to the point that it causes it to die out. It causes it to die, and so seeing a lot of neurological problems now with the consumption of these neurotoxins. Now they're in everything. Why? If my carrot doesn't taste good, why doesn't it taste good? Remember I talked about what the soil's bad, and so there's no nutrition in the carrot, so it doesn't taste sweet, so there's no taste to it. So what do people do? Instead of saying, we need to make a no more nutritious carrot, they said, no, let's use this tasteless carrot, and we'll add a chemical to it to make it taste good. Okay, the same with any type of food. And so once you start getting into this whole industrial processed foods, you realize it's all talking about food that has no flavor to it, no nutritional value, so there's no flavor, so they have to add something back into it, so we buy it. This is why, Doritos, the flavored Dorito chips, the chips, it tastes so good because it's loaded with these chemicals that your body goes, wow, woo, that tastes really good, okay? And again, it's a very deceptive food, and we need to really be careful. Now, problem is that foods are loaded with MSGs, okay? All kinds of foods are loaded with MSG. And so we just have to start trying to be aware. Now, what they've done now is they've changed names. Now, in Europe here, I know it's the 600s, or the E600s, that a lot of the artificial flavorings, is that right, Sindrid? Okay, I know MSG, I think 635 or 6-something. And so when you look on the back of your box of whatever, and you see an E600 number, I would, okay, hold on, there's something there that shouldn't be. We actually bought a book, because I'm thinking, what's E342? What's E, what are these things? So I'd ask the people at the grocery store, they're like, I don't know. But they're okay because, the government says it's okay to put it in. I said, hold on. I know enough to know that I don't trust my government anymore. So I went to buy a book, and there it was. It has all this list of the E numbers, and some of the stuff's fine, okay, but some of the stuff is like, whoa, toxic, deadly, And so we need to know what's in it. And so it's good for us to try to think of things. Now, some of the things that have MSG, there's the different names for it, hydrolyzed vegetable protein, hydrolyzed proteins, hydrolyzed, okay. Yeah, textured things, corn oils, all these different things have the MSG process. Now, what they'll say is the MSG is a natural amino acid, okay? It actually came from Japan, if I'm not mistaken. During World War II, the U.S. Marines and troops were going to invade Japan, and they'd overtake these Japanese troops that'd be starving to death, but they noticed all their rations tasted really good, even though the rations were rotten or it wasn't very whatever, just hanging out. But they said it tastes better than our food. And they realized it was what they were putting in it called an MSG. It's this mono sodium glutamate. Now, salt is a natural flavor enhancer. Okay, certain seaweeds, kombu, for example, is a seaweed. It's a natural flavor enhancer. So there's nothing wrong with enhancing flavors. It's just when we do it artificially that we get ourselves in trouble. Okay, artificial sweeteners. I'm sorry, question? Yeah. I don't know. Yeast, yes, I don't know. Lots of different yeast extracts, but usually it's tied into an MSG thing. Any comments, ladies who are cooking out there, yeast extracts? Might know anything about yeast extract, okay. But this is why I think what this whole movement's doing God's raising this up is that we're realizing I need to cook some more. I need to know how to cook some more. You know, I don't cook enough, or I never cooked before in my life, and so I want to get back into cooking. So when we start knowing what we're putting into our body, then it's easier to know what's okay to eat. And so I think this is what's really people are waking up to is like, I don't know what's in my food. Why am I going to eat it? Okay. We talked about the excitotoxin is this whole idea of artificial sweeteners. They've been sold because their main drawing point was there's no calories, zero calories, okay? And so that was that lie, that myth. They talked to the world, say, hey, a calorie is a calorie, and so you want to avoid, reduce your calories so you don't get overweight. And so they came up with this artificial sweeteners, and there's no calories, but it's an excitotoxin, and there's all kinds of health issues with these. And this is a whole other topic. Lots of things that are wrong with these. So when someone says no sugar, okay, that's a question. So why is it sweet if there's no sugar in it? Okay, and so we have the Coke Zeros now, mostly soft drinks. They've just been in America, the FDA just has approved to put this type of sweetener into milk. I'm thinking, what are they? They said it's okay to put this type of artificial sweetener in milk, and we'll sell it. And these milk drinks we're giving our kids and stuff as a healthy form to cut back on their calories. Of course, it's skim milk, you know, and with this artificial sweetener. So they're killing. It's a genocide that's going on a large scale. Yes. Stevia is, we'll get into sweeteners. It's a natural sweetener from a plant source, okay? Again, the key word is processed, okay? So they're processing stevia. And so if it's white, I don't see anywhere in my garden where plants are white. Okay, they're green. So they have color to them. So, and I think we'll talk about a little bit of sweeteners a little bit later. But that's, stevia is something that's, again, it's not a very common sweetener. So we stick with the common ones. What's historically been used for thousands of years, and that's one of them that's, I think it's fairly recent, or it's used locally in certain areas. Okay. Which one's this, number six? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, huh? Right there? Okay. So what does that mean for us who don't understand all that? Okay, depression causes, okay. Now, isn't it amazing, as the church, we say it's okay for Christians to drink that, because we don't think it's okay, but, you know, we can't drink a glass of wine, or don't, you know, but we tend to avoid the alcohol and the tobacco that we point our finger at, but then we say it's okay to drink these things. And this is where it grieves our heart to see, you know, wyvern bases where we're killing our young kids. We're teaching them to be addicts, drug addicts, to this type of thing. And then we got all these health issues, then we have to pray for them, and we need to change our way of thinking. We got to think biblically. Don't buy it. Okay, yeah, excellent. In fact, it's very deceptive. They use it as a weight loss, but actually increases your weight. I mean, you actually, those who don't eat enough, they give them this type of artificial sweeteners to make them eat more. So it actually causes your cravings to increase. So it's a total deceptive food. Proverbs 23, you sit down to dine with a ruler, be careful what's set before you. It's deceptive food. Okay, and who's the deceiver and the liar, of father of lies? It's Satan himself. And so I tend to point, this is a spiritual issue, and the father of this is, yeah, he's behind it. So, yeah, that's sort of a radical statement, but. Okay, extruders. Now, this is something that usually people haven't heard about, and it usually is like, what? Okay, and maybe before I do this, I should go into the grains. Why not do it in the grains first? Okay, remind me to go back to this, okay? Remind me to go back to that, and let me go to the grains right now. The grains are, right there, use properly prepared grains, okay, in its whole state, okay? Someone once said white rice didn't exist in the Garden of Eden, okay? It's processed, okay? It's rubbed out. So what do you mean by properly prepared grains and legumes? And this is something that I never knew, and this is something that Dr. Price found out over and over again. He said, why did they go with such great lengths to prepare their grains? They soaked them, they fermented them, they put them in rivers. You know, they did all kinds of things. Why did they do that? And what we know now is that God has put special preservatives around all these grains, okay? And so what it is, it's when you dry a grain, it's able to hold, it's able to be stored for many years. In fact, they found tombs, Egyptian tombs with wheat in it, and they're able to sprout them again. Why? Because there's a protective chemicals around a grain that protects from the bugs eating it, okay? And so what that does, they're called anti-nutrients. There are different couple of acids called phytic acids that actually inhibit our body to absorb certain nutrients. And this is why historically people always sourdough their bread, because that souring, that leavening process, the soaking process causes these things to be neutralizes, and it neutralizes so our body is able to absorb everything. And so we like to tell people, so be kind to your grains be kind to you. And so today there's a big anti-grain push because of all the gluten intolerance, okay? And I say, well, Jesus said he's the bread of life. No, why would he call himself something that's not good for us, that causes all these issues physically? So I've learned now to question, well, why are we gluten intolerant? And they're bringing it back because we're not preparing our grains right. We're not knowing how to digest properly. In fact, we've looked from over the years that, you know, cows' stomachs, all these ruminant animals have many stomachs or pouches where different digestive processes take place. And so they go from stomach to allow a different digestion. Now, we only have one pouch, stomach. And so we need to pre-digest our food before we eat it. And this is why culture is always pre-digested by fermenting, pre-digested by soaking things before they ate. In fact, I had a sister who I was eating oatmeal. She says, I can't eat oatmeal. I said, well, why not? She said, well, it hurts my stomach. I said, well, have you ever soaked your oatmeal before? She said, well, what? Well, oatmeal has a very high phytic acid content to protect all the nutrients in the oatmeal. So just soak it in some acidic type of thing, like lemon juice, water with lemon juice, but let it away. Oh, she tried it. She came back and said, Craig, it doesn't hurt my stomach anymore. Well, that's why, because we're pre-digesting these grains. And so we want to learn how to do that. And so God's given the grain with all kinds of different layers, and all of them are part important part. And what man has done is they separate the bran out from this side, the germ on this side. And, you know, back when I was a healthy nut, I would go to the health food store and buy my bag of wheat germ, and then buy my bag of bran, and I'd add it to my cereal, you know. But God made it so we eat it together. So you grind it up together, you have it all at one point. And so bread should be brown, you know. My son says, well, Daddy, where's brown bread come from? I said, okay, let's look at a grain of wheat. There it is. What color is it? It's brown, Daddy. And with little grinders, we grind that wheat. What color is the flour? What sort of brown? Okay, so what color should the bread be? Brown. So where does the white flour come from, Daddy? Well, and I explain, they refine everything, take it all out. And so they refine it, and they add in their own synthetic vitamins. Again, it's an arrogant, proud man saying, God, you screwed up. I know it's better to put into bread. And so we add these synthetic things back in. And so what we try to do is, if possible, you can grind your own grain, or you can find somebody who can buy grain in the area. So there's different ways to do this. Again, start just where you're at. We're not saying go out and buy in a grain mill and then spend 10 hours a day in the kitchen. But start looking, okay, how can I start doing my grains properly? How can I maybe start soaking them or process them properly? And so there's lots of good things in grains, lots of B vitamins, et cetera, et cetera. But some of the bad things that are in the grains are these things, the phytic acid, the enzyme inhibitors, the fiber. Okay, if it's not proper, it actually causes a lot of irritation in the bowel. So rancid acids, et cetera, protein. So what type of loving God would put bad things in grain? I mean, is Jesus a lousy designer? No, he put those in there so that seed can be able to be stored for long periods of time. So praise God, we have grains throughout the year. Isn't our God good? So we can pull out that dried wheat, and we have freshly baked bread in the middle of whenever, with ooh, melted butter on top, and a piece of cheese, and ooh, some garlic, yes, okay? But now we can get all those nutrients. And so without those nutrients being neutralized, we can't get all the nutrients that God put in it. So this is why we need to properly prepare our grains. And so it's basically used with moisture, warmth, a little bit of acidity, and time. This is why cultures always soak things. You realize that? I had an Egyptian brother say, come on, Craig, this whole idea of fermentation. Oh, come on. I said, well, sorry, but what did your mom do? I said, well, she didn't. Oh, you're right. She would soak the fava beans every night before we went to bed. She put it out in the water. I said, why does she do that? I don't know. And so he started realizing his cultural heritage was like, we did do this. And we made pickles together as a whole community. We fermented pickles together. It's like, oh, you're right. We've gotten so lost to the traditional type of wisdom on food that we said, well, it doesn't matter. Hallelujah. We're a new culture, especially the new generation. They think anything old-fashioned is like, we're the new generation. And this is where we got to really pray that God would bring together the older generation with the new generation so we can learn from each other. There's a fire the new generation has. Are you kidding? I'm not even close to that fire they have. But there's some wisdom we've learned over the years we want to pass on to the new generation. And we got to make sure that both parties are willing to teach it and receive it. So it's a very important time we're living in the body of Christ. Okay? So now that these grains, we understand how to soak them in ferment foods, use sourdoughs, all these different things. Let's get to cereals. Okay? And now cereals are grain. What's happening now is that we're using a extrusion, okay, the extrusion process. Okay, there's different type of extrusions. There's another force here. And what we're doing with these things is we're taking our grains, putting them into like a soup porridge type thing, and passing them through machines that, through high pressure and high temperature, make nice little flakes or nice little designs, you know, the Fruit Loops with little zeros in it, or I grew up on Captain Crunch and, you know, these sugared cereals that had little nice little designs in them. And we find it out now that high pressure, high temperature does something to the grain's protein. It actually makes it very toxic. And so we start eating all these cereals. We're eating something that's actually not healthy. You know, cereals are promoted as a health. Eat your cereal. You know, in Spain, cereals didn't exist in 1995, and now we have a half a row dedicated just to boxes of Kellogg's cereal. Okay, and they've done some studies on it, and they're not published because who would want to publish this type of thing? Paul Stitt, in one of his books called Fighting the Food Giants, four sets of rats were given special diets. One group received plain whole wheat, water, vitamins, and minerals. Another group received puffed wheat, water, and the same nutrient solution. A third set was given water and white sugar, and a fourth given nothing but water and the chemical nutrients. The rats that received the whole wheat lived over a year on the diet. The rats that got nothing but water and vitamins lived for about 8 weeks, and the animals on white sugar and water diet lived for about a month. But the company's own laboratory study showed the rats given vitamins, water, and all the puff wheat they wanted died in 2 weeks. Okay? And so it wasn't a matter of malnutrition. There was something going on in the actual grains. Okay? And so there's something toxic about the puff wheat itself. And so proteins are very similar to certain toxins in a molecular structure, and the puffing process of putting the grain under 1,500 pounds of pressure per square inch and then releasing it causes something to change, okay? And so we say this because I know we're all used to cereals. That's why we give them a box of cereal with some milk, okay? This is a study here. It's done by, described by one of Sally Foyon's book, is University of Michigan in 1960. 18 rats were divided into three groups. One group received cornflakes and water. A second group was given the cardboard box that the cornflakes came in and water. And the control group received rat chow and water. The rats in the control group remained in good health throughout the experiment, and the rats receiving the box became lethargic and eventually died of malnutrition. But the rats receiving the cornflakes and water died before the rats that were given the box. The last cornflake rat died on the day the first box rat died. Okay. And before death, the cornflake rats developed schizophrenic behavior, threw fits, bit each other, and finally went into convulsions. Okay. My wife just sent me last night in the UK, who's that famous? Oliver. There's some man being used a lot. Jamie Oliver. Okay. He's really stirring up the whole UK to eat healthier. In America as well. Okay. My wife sent me these two links about these studies now of the UK. They had two groups of kids come out, and they divided them in the school, and it had all special, and they gave them a celebration. One side was cookies and cakes and potato chips and colas, and the other side was whole wheat sandwiches with meat and cheese and fruit and vegetables and stuff. And they had them eat, and they studied them, okay? And it was amazing. The group that had the high sugar diet and the high processed foods were going off the walls. And the other kids were well controlled. And they started counting all the misbehavior types thing, the fits. It was just massively different. So food affects our behavior. This whole idea of ADD, attention deficit disorder, I'm sorry, from what I understand, it's food related, it's chemical related, and we gotta stop giving our kids high sugar diets and then wondering why they aren't changing. We're praying, oh God, please, no. Mom, stop giving them sugar for breakfast and sugar for lunch, you know? We give them their chocolate-flavored cereal with skim milk and chocolate nocilla over white flour, white bread. And we wonder why our kids are freaking out. Okay. And so the interesting thing is, well, what if I buy organic cereals? Well, from what I understand is that the more protein, organic cereals have more protein because it's grown better. But it's the protein that causes the problem when it's forced under high pressure. So the organic cereals are actually even worse from a toxicity standpoint. So what about granola? Make your own granola, great. Make your own cereals. What about just making good old-fashioned oatmeal? Okay, soak your oatmeal overnight in some lemon juice or whatever and cook it up in the morning. And then you can have a good old oatmeal as well with some different type of sweeteners with it and some lots of butter. Yes. Good question. I don't know. I know that, again, that cooking should not be a complicated issue. We just soak it in the same water. I use filtered water. I add maybe 2 or 3 tablespoons of whey or maybe lemon juice in my oats before I go to bed. It takes me about 23 seconds to do ding, 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 ding. So those who think it's too time-consuming, it's not. Next morning, I dump that whole liquid into another cup of boiling water with a little bit of salt in it, and then 1 or 2 minutes, it's cooked. Nice and soft, and then I add some big chunks of butter to it, and then I add homemade sweeteners. So, good question. No, yeah, I guess, is it the grain? Are those groats? What's the rolled oats? Yes, I from what I understand, try to go for the rolled oats or less processed. These idea, these light flakes, I understand it's gone through some type of thing as well, so... Again, I can just start, eat oatmeal, instead of your other type of things, and just start from there. And you can research there's a whole webpage on the Oatmeal Society, and they tell more about the type of things. We can give those to you. Right. I from what I understand, roasting or sprouting does something to this thing, yes. I believe so. Don't hold me on that. But again, we want to make it simple. Again, people ate oatmeal. I mean, here in Switzerland, you have the oats or the oatmeal, the granola with the raw, with the raisins, muesli. I'm sorry, the muesli, yeah. So, but I think we'll start noticing our stomach. You know, I've noticed it now. If I'll eat certain type of things and I've been soaked, it's like my stomach hurts. Well, Craig, are you becoming a wuss, a wimp when it comes to eating? You should be a YRM. YRMers eat anything. So we just have to be, okay, Lord, what do I do here? Sourdough pancakes, you know, again, you can soak the grain overnight, soak the things, and we made a blender. One of the recipes on your outline is a blender waffle, and using a blender, and you can have the best tasting waffles simply using kefir, grains, and some olive oil. Let it blend it up, and let it sit overnight so all that phytic acid is neutralized. The next morning, a couple eggs, pour it on your griddle, and you can use brown rice with oatmeal or spelt with oatmeal. You can combine these different things. They're great tasting things. Great tasting oatmeals are things. Okay, sourdough pancakes. This is why the sourdoughing is so important. It neutralizes. It releases things. And of course, if you're making sourdough pancakes, what do you put on your pancake? Butter. Okay, you're gonna have your butter. Why? Because you want those vitamin A and D. Now this is exaggerated, but I wouldn't mind that. So, yeah. And the same thing is applied to the seeds. And this is very interesting. Seeds. And one of the books we recommend on your list there is called Nourishing Traditions by Sally Foyon. And it goes into all these traditional foods and how they prepare them. And she talks into all these different things of soaking. So we make crispy nuts. And so I take pumpkin seeds or I take almonds or walnuts and I'll soak them overnight in salt, sea salt. And it releases all those, the phytic acids. And so you eat them, it's like, hey, I've had many people say, Craig, I can't eat almonds because they hurt my tummy. So we'll try my almonds. Hey, why does it hurt my stomach? I explain what I did. Oh, what'd you learn? You're such a wise, no, I'm not wise. I read it in a book, and I'm realizing we're missing something here, okay? And so it does take more time. We just have to think about what we're eating these days, but it's something that we can do. Crispy nuts, you can do pecans and cashews and almonds and pepitas, okay? Okay, so that's fun to do, and it tastes good. It tastes really good. Okay, now, does that mean I can't eat seeds? Well, no, I think that we've got to be balanced here. You saw Jesus, his disciples, walking through the grain fields, eating the heads of grain. Now, saying that, I thought, well, gee, they're not soaking their grain, you know, and they're eating their heads of grain. But someone told me, I don't know if this is true or not, in the Middle East, when they harvested grain, they would cut it and they would stack it in these big, huge, typical, the old-fashioned, I don't know what you call them, bundles? They're standing upright. And he said that drying process causes some type of fermentation to take place. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, so if anybody heard about that, let me know, but I don't know. But I think, let's just be realistic. You know, I can't eat that seed because it's not soaked. Hey, instead of that, and a bit of a candy bar. Okay. Let's get to soy. Okay, soy is a grain. Did God create soybean? Yeah, he did. Green plants bearing seed, you bet. In fact, soy was used historically for many things, especially for agricultural cover crops, which means they plant the soybean, and because it's a nitrogen-fixating legume, which, you know, organic gardeners understand that, how to get nitrogen back in the soil for my crops, they plant beans. And so what they'll do is they'll have them grow, and then they'll till that under, and there's fertilizer for the plant. Okay, so soy is one of those that used historically. And so what people now are doing is that we're realizing, hey, I'm allergic to milk and all these issues, and so we've been told that soy is the next best thing to sliced bread. It's the most healthiest source of, it's the miracle food to feed the world. And I want to bring some points here that I don't think that's true, and I believe it's used in it's a very deadly sense, okay? It needs to be prepared very properly, okay? And so what we are told is, okay, this doesn't come up. Okay, I have got a couple slides here that don't show up for some reason. In the West, now you ladies are from Asia, okay? And so we are told in the West that, well, the Asians eat lots of soy, and they're very healthy, and therefore we need to eat soy as well, okay? And so that's typically what we've heard. Is that sort of true, okay? Well, how much soy do you eat? When you eat soy, well, how do you eat your soy? Okay, tofu. Okay. Miso, soy sauce. Okay, from what I understand that, yes, the Asians, you might eat soy every day, but they eat it in a very special form, and it's in a fermented form. Like tofu, miso, soy sauce. Well, what do you mean? Well, maybe we talk about all these bad things in grains. For some reason, soy has high levels of these bad things. I don't know why, and especially a lot of female hormones, a lot of estrogens, okay? And so, what's it called? Yeah, lecithin, yeah. And so, unless those are neutralized, they're actually very detrimental to the body's health. And so, this is why, historically, soy was used, but was always fermented for long periods of time. Soy sauce now, we have found, if you look on the soy sauce, it just says, hey, soy sauce. But you need to find a soy sauce traditionally made. It'll say fermented for at least 9 months or 6 months, months at a time. Why? Because it neutralizes all these different type of things. And so, yes, the Asians eat soy in their diet, but usually a small amount, and it's as a form of a condiment. Now, in the West, we have soy burgers or soy hot dogs. Now, do you have soy hot dogs in okay, that's soy though, right? But see, there's a marketing over in the West that says, hey, soy is good because the Asians eat it, so we'll make it into soy hamburgers, we'll make it into soy chips, we'll make it into soy cereal, we'll make it into soy everything, okay? And so it's a very unusual grain, okay? And so it's not the health benefit thing that we talked about. In fact, there's a lot of problems with soy foods. I've heard about, since people are eating so much soy these days, the doctors are now realizing babies born to mothers who consume a lot of soy and all those female hormones, their babies are actually being born. For instance, males are actually coming out without a penis, or their penises are actually moved up to the side. And so they can correct that through surgery, and they're called, I think it's called aphrodites. Aphrodites is the word they use for, it's an aphrodite. Boys with nipples or breasts because of all the female hormones going into it. And so we recommend study things on soy. We've got some information here called Soy Alert. If you go to the Western Enterprise webpage, it's good for us to look into those things. Now, does the Bible talk about soy? Well, it doesn't. So this is where we have to use history. What it does say, the Bible says green plants are for food. Okay, so soy can be a food. But we have to go to history to see, well, how was soy used throughout history in a healthy way? Okay, so this is where we get the Bible back to us, even though it doesn't talk about that. Okay, and so we are told as a myth that soy estrogens are beneficial for your health and in everything. That's false. And notice on the bottom here, You have your organic soy milk and your organic cow milk right next to each other. Why? Because it's the same industry now. Same industry. And so the people say, well, get off milk because it's bad for you. Get into soy milk. What's the same industry now? It's just making money off us. Soy milk, yeah. Traditional soy versus modern soy. Here we have traditionally prepared soy sauce, tempeh, soy milk, tofu, miso, natto. Okay, soy milk was used, I understand, but it was always prepared, specially prepared with egg yolks and different ways to make sure we got the digestion. But today we have all kinds of processed soy, and it's not normal. So those were fertility issues. The first thing they're saying, women who have fertility issues, get off soy because it's throwing the hormones off. Men, get off soy. So don't buy into this idea that soy is healthy for you. It can be healthy. I understand, is it natto or miso that's really strong smelling? Natto is? Okay, I understand there's special brooms to eat that because it's so... You've had it? Okay, do you want to explain or experience you had eating that?
I don't like it.
Okay, it's like soy paste. Okay. Okay. Okay, so, yeah, there's lots of, and guess what they're doing now for soy? What are they putting the soy a lot in? What's in soy? Well, putting in everything, but how about baby formula? A lot of problems with baby formula, a lot of soy and baby formula. We did, because, I mean, they're actually encouraging women get off breast milk because it has high cholesterol, get on soy. Okay, guys, we need to think here. What they're saying, underlying, they're saying God is a lousy designer, okay? And when you get back on these things, so we're, you know, vegetarian diets and stuff, so we have to be really careful. This whole movement of this anti-meat, pro-veggie is actually, it's a very subtle, new age, anti-God movement. So we have to take out what is right and then say, like, that is way wrong. Huh? Corn. Okay. What's it called? Corn. Okay. Has anybody heard about that? Okay. And what is it? When you said fermented, I think, okay, it sounds like a... Okay. Okay. Okay, so I would look at that just from a traditional historical standpoint. Okay, mushrooms, okay, naturally used... Now, some people say, well, are mushrooms good to eat because they grow off dead things? I don't know, but mushrooms have been used traditionally for a lot of issues, and so you ferment it. Okay, to me it sounds like a traditional food that cultures had in different areas of the world. So next time you eat it, say, Holy Spirit, is this okay? Okay. Well, that's what you have to figure out. Now they're making imitation everything, okay? So we have to be discerning because now they have thousands of flavors now, so they'll have like synthetic meats and everything's on the tongue now. It's all official. Okay. Speaking of baby formula for soy, high female estrogen levels in it, and so basically we're giving our kids birth control pills a day. Like this is, again, we think, what is going on? Who would be thinking these things? And I have to go back. This genocide. Why? Who would want to make sure the earth is not populated? Okay, it goes against the very biblical mandate God gave to us in Noah's days. Okay, it continues today. The earth is not overpopulated. There's plenty of food, and we just have to make it right. This idea that, birth control because of the overpopulation, that's a satanic thought, okay? And it's not in the heart of God, and so we need the wisdom to grow food. We're so used to making mistakes and doing problems with, you know, hoarding our food and making it wrong, so we need to get wisdom in doing that. So I recommend, I'm sorry, go ahead. This is coming from the States. Now, again, I don't know. This is where we have to be more discerning. I don't know exactly. That's a good question. Is soy... Okay. Now, the scary thing is not only soy, but most soy is genetically modified, and that makes it even worse. Okay, so now I know there's the GMO laws here in Europe don't allow GMO stuff to come in, so maybe they're making soy from a non-GMO source. But I know that's a huge problem. Most of the GMO crops today are corn, soy, sugar beet, canola, and alfalfa is one. cotton, okay, papaya. So they're trying to get more and more. They just okayed now genetically modified salmon. And so going back to meats, okay, high quality meat. When you see fish grown in a farms, okay, you have to stop. Now, the idea of aquaponics, for example, we're raising fish, but using a natural sense. Now, when we start getting into some of these aquacultural type foods, man decides what the fish needs. And so they'll feed them soy, they'll feed them leftover whatever. Okay, this is where man, just like it did to cattle, we're doing to fish. Now, the genetically modified salmon, it grows to be a monster salmon. And what people are concerned about, what if those salmon got loose and they got into the natural source of things? It's going to wreck up the whole ecosystem. And so we need to be concerned what's going on in the format. Alrighty, should take a 5-minute break here and we'll finish up with the last 35, 40 minutes. I know you guys should, it's a lot of information. We want to try to cover as best we can so you guys can go home and digest it and turn the TV off and go, what is this? Let me meditate on this. And we'll take a 5-minute break. And then any questions as we're just stretching? One step at a time, okay? Can't do everything at once. You know, it's not like, oh my gosh. I guess it goes back to a personal, right? Because some cultures, we say, what's your name, Price, eat lots of meat, others didn't. I know personally, I need meat. I've realized that I if I don't have meat, I lose energy, I get tired, I'm lethargic, and I realize, Craig, I need protein. Now, there's different ways of testing your body types, usually from a secular standpoint, where they say, hey, you seem to do better more on carbohydrates and proteins or fats. And so I think we just knowing our hearts individually. And so I like meat, and now it's good to eat it with certain things. This is why historically a lot of cultures ate their meat with lots of enzyme-rich foods. Okay, and we didn't talk about this, but why is sauerkraut eaten with bratwurst? Why? Because sauerkraut helps the body digest meats. Okay, we need these enzymes, and these cultures always had high enzymatic foods. Mustard helps produce hydrochloric acid in your body, so you're able to digest more things. And so we're talking about digestive issues. People have low stomach acid. Well, we can help that by just giving it salt or giving it spicy foods or helping with the enzyme, helping the digestion. And so meats are, people say, well, they're hard to digest. We shouldn't be eating meat. Well, cultures ate it with something, with fat, with raw milk, or with lots of enzyme-rich foods to help the body digest properly. Okay, so I think it's a personal choice, at least from my standpoint. I know in cancer research or cancer, people say, well, get off meat if you have a cancer. Well, there's a lot of medical doctors that say, well, it depends on the person. There's people they will study and they'll say, you need to get off meat to be healed of cancer. Others will say, you need to eat red meat 3 times a day to help you heal with cancer. So our bodies, it goes back to our bodies are all a little different. We need to figure out what's my body like. So we have to know our bodies. I know my little tweaks, my aches and my pains, and so I know my body better than the doctor does. So just understanding how to do that. I think you asked me about how do we test our bodies. Okay, there's some lot, who was testing that? Okay, how do we know if I'm healthy or not? And so there's a lot of different alternative ways that, I'm much more open to now.